Hi, I'm Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is Monday, September 16th, 2013, and this is the 11th episode of the show. You can find the show at theastrologypodcast.com, and you can also listen to us on iTunes. My guest today is Montreal-based astrologer Nick Degenbest, who recently published a book titled Uranus USA, Astrology Looks at the First Planet and Nation of the New World. During the course of this show, we'll talk to Nick about some of the research that went into his book, as well as some of the insights that he came to about the relationship between the planet Uranus and the United States. So, Nick, with that out of the way, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I think I had you once last summer for one of our early shows to talk about the definition of astrologer, and I thought it would be good to have you back now that your book is out, and I know that you've been working on it for several years now, right?
Yeah. It was part of a larger sort of work that I wanted to do about Uranus. It still is. I have other little books that I'll write about Uranus down the road after I write about some other things. But it was a sort of a natural first book to focus on Uranus.
Sure. And what is exactly the scope of the book?
Well, the reason I thought it was a good first book to start with is because it starts with the discovery of Uranus, really, which happens to coincide with the same period in history as the American Revolution.
Uranus was discovered what year again?
1781, the 13th of March, 1781.
Okay,
which is the same year that the Battle of Yorktown occurs, which is the last sort of official battle between the British Army and the American and French troops in the American Revolution.
Okay.
So, in other words, the thing that strikes me just off the bat is that the discovery of Uranus is completely coincidental in the literal sense of the word with the emerging United States of America, with this new nation. In fact, the first constitution of the United States of America, the Articles of Confederation, was ratified on the 1st of March, 1781, just 12 days before Uranus would be discovered. So that in itself is sort of an interesting little connection between the two. But there's something actually a lot more profound about the whole thing, because it doesn't just sort of begin and end with the Revolution. Something I noticed long ago, and I'm certainly not the first astrologer to notice this this fact, although I guess I'm the first to write about it in this way, is that whenever you're transiting Uranus has been in Gemini, the United States has found itself in a very big war, and the end of which, I mean, obviously the United States gets into a lot of wars, but the thing about this period, whenever Uranus is in Gemini, is it's a war that tends to redefine the United States of America by the time it's over. Yeah. These three periods are 1774 to 1781, which is the American Revolution pretty much from beginning to end. Then 1858 until 1865, beginning with the Lincoln-Douglas debates going through the American Civil War. And then 1941 to 1949, which bookends the sort of the period between American involvement in the Second World War and the early part of the Cold War just prior to when the Soviets get the nuclear bomb. So the part of the Cold War where really the United States was the only superpower, as it were.
Sure. So this is essentially Uranus cycle?
Which is 84 years. Yeah, Uranus spends 7 years in each of the 12 tropical signs, a total of 84 years. You know, when Lincoln said 80 and, you know, 7 years ago, he's making it in his own way a reference to the fact that a whole Uranus cycle has passed between the Declaration of Independence and when he's giving the Gettysburg Address, you know, with a couple of extra years in there. But you know, basically that whole Uranus cycle is even in implied in some way in the Gettysburg Address, although I'm sure that's not what Lincoln himself had in mind.
Sure.
But yeah, in other words, this is a striking cycle, and because of the obvious importance of these three specific periods in the country's history. Like I said, the United States of America gets into a lot of wars, and the wars may change things about the country. Like, for instance, the Mexican-American War, the country gained a lot of territory out of that, or the First World War in its own way brought the that gave the vote to women, you know, as a sort of consequence of the ending of that war. But when it comes to the three wars that I talk about in the book, the ones that coincide with Uranus and Gemini, these are wars that seem to redefine the United States of America. By the end of these wars, that the country is a different place or sees itself differently or identifies it differently. For instance, just between the Revolution and the Civil War, a few historians have said that prior to the Civil War, people used to say these United States of America, whereas afterwards it was the United States. It went from being a sort of a plural identification to a singular identification.
Sure.
And things like that. And obviously that with the end of the Second World War, the United States suddenly finds itself with this, awesome weapon in the worst sense of the word. A real global power, whereas just a decade earlier, they'd been really trying to demilitarize in a big way. So this, it's something that there's like a reinvention. The first chapter of the book is titled after a quote from Thomas Paine, where he said, "In Common Sense, we have it in our power to begin the world over again." And it's almost as though when Paine said that, he was tagging the United States to be a place that would perpetually reinvent itself every 84 years, which I think is the sort of the underlying point of the book, is what we see happening.
Sure. And I think, some other astrologers have commented on some of those broad things, like the discovery of Uranus and the start of the United States or the Revolutionary War. And
yes,
because it's a little bit difficult not to, astrologers look back on when the planets were discovered and they see what kind of events were occurring in the world in order to get a sense for what that planet means. Your book is interesting because you touch upon some of those points that other people have sort of gone over before, like the Uranus cycle and the breakout of major wars. But you actually took that as a starting point and which went much further in depth with that study than anybody has before by studying different applications of Uranus, different ways to study it, either in mundane astrology or natal astrology, as well as the integration of other cycles, like the Venus cycle and how it works together sometimes with the Uranus cycle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say Uranus is really, perhaps the star of the story, the protagonist. But there are a lot of other characters, for instance, the other planets. They all interact with Uranus over the course of the story. You see Uranus interacting with Saturn, with Venus, with Mars. So it's not sort of one of these astrology books about a single planet where only that planet is discussed. The planet is discussed within all these sort of different astrological contexts.
Sure.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
And the context is actually, it's basically the book is a collection of short stories that are almost biographical entries or historical write-ups, but they're ones that integrate the astrology into the history, right?
That's right. I that tends to be my style, is I combine biography and sort of broader historical context. So the book will discuss, for instance, military battles like Saratoga, in the Revolutionary War, or Antietam in the Civil War, or D-Day in the Second World War, but it also has biographical profiles of people like Thomas Paine, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and so forth. So it's very much a combination of those two degrees of focus, from the very personal to the very sort of universal. There's quite a bit of natal astrology in there, even though it's mostly a book about mundane astrology. Part of being a mundane astrologer involves looking at the people involved in the historical context and what was happening to them astrologically, not just what's happening to the country. So yeah, that's definitely something that the book does that is different from anything. Any other sort of work of this type, I'd say.
Sure, and you could really read it because your background is essentially as a biographer and a historian. You have essentially the way that the book is set up when you open it is that on one side you could you could basically read one side and it's all entirely about the astrology that you're covering, while the other page or other facing page is entirely about the history of some specific event or biography.
Yeah, that's right. The left side pages recount the historical anecdote about whoever I'm discussing, be it a person or an event. And then the right-sided page goes into the astrology behind the matter. So indeed, it's the kind of book that someone could conceivably, if they had just no interest whatsoever in learning astrology, they could still just read the left-sided pages and get a pretty interesting little historical overview of these three periods in American history. The book serves as a sort of astrological textbook. It can be used as an astrology textbook, but it's not written like a textbook. It's written like a storybook, and the delineations for the planets and their transits are not written in a very sort of obvious textbook or cookbook sort of fashion, but are rather sort of woven into the literature itself. They're part of the author's recounting of the story. So it's kind of a different approach in that way, again, in terms of reading a book to learn astrology.
Sure.
It's not written in that sort of obvious textbook style.
So this is not a cookbook book on astrology that you pick up to read about what Uranus means in my 11th house or what have you. It's a book that discusses Uranus and has a bunch of almost essentially empirical studies on this is what Uranus has coincided with in these major historical events or in the lives of individuals in the past. And from that, you can kind of glean some of the meaning of Uranus and some of the potentials of certain Uranus transits or placements.
That's right. I mean, like I said, I do plan on writing other Uranus books, so I didn't necessarily lay out everything I know or that I've observed about the planet. I still have a lot more to say about what the planet does to a sign and what have you, but I planned on revealing that in later works. I have lost my train of thought.
Sure. Well, let's go into some examples about, because some of these stories that you cover about Uranus and the United States are about mundane things, things that affected large groups of people, like the Uranus transits through Gemini and the major transformational wars that have broken out. But some of them are about individual biographies. So what do you have maybe an example or two of a couple of biographies and studies that you specifically did with Uranus in those stories?
Yeah. Now I remember what I was about to say. I was about to address just this. In terms of the natal astrology involved, there are certain sort of astrological topics I tackle and use figures from history to discuss them. One such example would be solar returns. I have a thread going through the three chapters of the book where I discuss solar returns in the lives of relevant major figures in these three periods. But there's a phenomenon that I noticed that's very interesting. One of the things I look at when I look at solar returns is the speed of planets in the solar return chart. I look to see if any of the planets are slowing down or speeding up right at that particular time of a given person's solar return chart. And what I discovered was something interesting involving the direct station of Uranus. Now, as we've already discussed, Uranus has a cycle of 84 years. It takes 84 years to go around the zodiac. And consequently, in a person's solar return, there's really a 1 in 84 chance that Uranus is going to be making its direct station very close to the date of a given person's solar return chart. So that 1 in 84 chance becomes very striking in the context of the book, because what I stumbled upon was that if you take the solar return of Tom Paine in 1776, the year he wrote and published Common Sense, Uranus was making a direct station in his solar return that very year. And then if you jump ahead to 1860, Abraham Lincoln had Uranus making a direct station in his solar return chart. And in his case, he was actually born on the day of a Uranus retrograde station. And then Franklin Roosevelt, in 1941, he had Uranus making a direct station in his solar return chart. And this is very striking. Payne wasn't president the way Lincoln and Roosevelt were, but I think the three of them, apart from the other two guys being presidents, all three of them were sort of the voices and the consciences of these wars. They were, you know, the sort of the spiritual figureheads of these wars. And so it's very interesting that you find this one little sort of common theme that's rare enough. I mean, a 1 in 84 chance. Of course, three examples is by no means a scientific study, but I do have a lot of other examples of this same phenomenon outside the context of American history. But just in the context of the book, I found it very striking that those three people shared this one little, you know, factor.
Sure.
So there are things like that. I also talk about the Uranus conjunction transit to the natal sun. I have a lot of Geminis that I discuss in the book. I find it very interesting. For instance, that King George III, the very British king who the revolution was fought to sort of not overthrow but to extract from his rule, he had a Gemini sun, and transiting Uranus was conjunct his natal sun right when the United States signed a treaty with France, bringing France onto the American side of the war, which of course is really important because it was really France that won that war. And this fact is especially interesting because King George was originally, when William Herschel discovered Uranus in 1781, he was going to call the planet George after King George. So it's especially funny.
Nice.
that this guy who has a Uranus transit and a classic Uranus transit, if you will, because he's a king and he's being overthrown by his subjects, if you will. He's being, you know, there is sort of something Oedipal, just like in the Uranian myth, about what happens to him with that transit. And it's especially funny that if William Herschel had his way, the planet would be called George.
Sure. That's perfect.
That is perfect, yeah. And similarly, there are other Geminis I discuss in the book. Patrick Henry, who famously he's often quoted as having said, "Give me liberty or give me death." We don't know if he really did say that, although he probably said something like that. He was a Gemini. And the thing I point out in the book relating to Patrick Henry is before the Declaration of Independence was even conceived, Virginia, before the United States, declared independence and elected a new governor of a new sort of republic or commonwealth. And it was Patrick Henry that they elected to be governor of this newly independent Virginia. And the Declaration of Independence sort of followed all of this. And the reason this is interesting is Patrick Henry was a Gemini and Uranus was conjunct his sun when he was elected and inaugurated the governor of this new Republic of Virginia. And it's interesting because this is the prototype of what would become the U.S. presidency. If we think of the U.S. presidency of being, you know, the head of a republic state, that's what Virginia was before the United States of America was created.
Sure.
or even identified. And so that's interesting, is that the not only was King George having a Uranus conjunction transit to his son, but on the opposite side of the ocean, the first sort of elected leader of a kingless nation, if you will, which at that point in time Virginia would consider itself, is also having that Uranus conjunction transit to his natal sun.
So essentially it's not just that Uranus is discovered and the Revolutionary War is taking place and that Uranus becomes connected to the country of the United States in a very core, very pivotal way, but also many of the core players at the time, the people who are involved in the revolution and subsequent events, were having very prominent either natal placements of Uranus or transiting hits.
Yes.
From Uranus to their natal chart at the time.
Exactly. And in later chapters, I go on to make similar observations about, say, Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, well, he was a Gemini, and Uranus was conjunct his sun when he became president of the Confederacy. So you see little bits of there's a sense of history repeating itself in these subtle little ways, and that's something that's another sort of recurring theme in the book. I point out what's different about it. Obviously, there's a lot that's different between these three periods in history, but I succeeded using astrology in finding a number of common threads or sort of recurring themes over the course of these three periods. And I think the book's quite successful at pointing these out.
Sure. And that's one of the things that'll be useful about this book and your research in general is that you're oftentimes just pointing out correlations. You're not necessarily drawing conclusions about them. Like, I'm trying to insert some conclusions here while we're talking, but for the most part, you don't really do that in the book. You just sort of objectively write out the history of what happened or when a person was born or what transits took place on certain dates and sort of let the reader draw their own conclusions. And in that way, the book is actually probably one of the more, if not the most, types of books that's compelling to people that either aren't into astrology or are even perhaps skeptical about astrology, because you're just presenting the correlations and letting the reader draw their own conclusion.
Yeah, that was a liberty. I mean, in my decision to really make a work of literature rather than a sort of, you know, stiff backed textbook, as a simple work of literature, just being a storyteller, adopting the mantle of a storyteller, I don't feel like I need to sort of take the reader by the hand and lead them directly to a bunch of conclusions. You know, a lot of the great sort of works of literature usually give the reader some room to sort of contemplate what's being presented rather than have it all drawn out, you know, very literally or obviously. So I did opt to do that. And also because it's the first book in a series, I also, you know, didn't feel like I had to present everything I know all at once. I have plenty more to say about Uranus that goes beyond the scope of just a you know, this one subject of the United States, and I do plan on eventually, you know, discussing it and writing about it. But I felt that, number one, as a work of literature, I didn't have the same responsibility, or I was eschewing the responsibility. Maybe some folks would think I have it, but I was eschewing the responsibility of leading people in a very sort of obvious or deliberate way to the conclusions. It's very specific conclusions, and rather, I think the work speaks for itself. I think just telling the story, the reader gets a real sense of Uranus's presence in the nation's history, and some idea of what a transit of Uranus, what Uranus represents astrologically, how it's delineated. I would say, I guess one thing I don't mention in the book, but that I do discuss a lot when I do astrology talks and what have you about Uranus, is that Uranus seems to pervert the values of the sign it's transiting through. I'll give you an example. Right now, it's in Aries, mm-hmm. If we look at previous periods when Uranus is in Aries, and certainly even this age that we live in now, the theme that comes out is we have a lot of these mass uprisings, mass political uprisings. In the 1840s, Europe was having revolutions all over the place. In the 1930s, of course, we had the labor union movements and a lot of activism. And of course, in our era, we've seen things like the Arab Spring and the Occupy movement. Now, why is this perverting the values associated with Aries? Well, Aries is a sign that values leadership, that values the individual, the singular individual who leads the masses. But what happens when Uranus is in Aries is the masses function as a sort of individual. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, you don't like it or I don't like it. Maybe I think a lot of people have enjoyed seeing it happen in the world, but the point is, Aries doesn't like it. You know, Aries—it's not a sort of natural mode of operating for the values one would associate with that sign.
Sure.
And that's what Uranus seems to do no matter where it goes. It does something to sort of corrupt or pervert the value that you would associate with it. So that's not something I spell out too obviously in the book, but that I'll probably touch on when I discuss Uranus's transits through other signs besides just this one, just Gemini.
Sure. And one of the things, I mean, there's many things that are unique about this book and that might be firsts, which is kind of apropos or ironic or what have you, given the subject matter. But one of the things that's unique about your book is you actually didn't, it's not actually a normal astrology book. You actually designed it with a very artistic sense in mind in order to make it like a graphic novel or a comic book, essentially, right?
Yeah. There were a number of reasons for doing that. Certainly, when I thought back to when I started studying astrology, some of my favorite books were really pretty. I'm thinking of things like A.T. Mann's The Round Art, mm-hmm. or Derek and Julia Parker's classic Complete Astrologer.
Right.
These are really, you know, I mean, they were great astrology books that taught me a lot at the time. Well written and well presented, but they also looked really great with wonderful illustrations and design, and that always appealed to me. And in this day and age, being a literature fan myself, you're struck with this medium, the graphic novel, that allows the an author to sort of delve into creativity with more than just words. I have a cinematic background, and graphic novels are a sort of literary merging of literary styles and cinematic styles. And astrology is already a very visual medium, so I thought, you know, that was another reason I wanted to have, chart wheels and sky diagrams and other artwork. So it just made sense to focus on what I've got, which is a full color graphic novel, and very pretty looking, if I say so myself.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing about graphic novels is my sense was that that's what the intelligentsia of today. You know, if you really want to read the thinking people, they're in the comic book stores these days. That's where you're going to find them. So I wanted to branch out. I wanted to write a book that wouldn't necessarily fit on, you know, in the New Age section at Barnes & Noble. This book is trying very hard to sort of bust out of a narrow audience that is only interested in astrology outside of any other context. I'm trying to break into the comic book world. I'm trying to break into the historical literature world. The book is trying to be a lot of things at once. Not unlike its subject matter, the United States of America. There's a lot of different facets to how it can be seen.
Sure. And this is part of your overall strategy, that this is going to be your format, that you're sort of this, that,
yeah,
that you're innovating, and that you plan to follow up on with a number of other issues.
Yes.
Or volumes, right?
Yeah. I have a bunch of book ideas planned. I'm already working pretty hard on the next two or three. I've got them outlined, and I've got artwork that I'm putting together. So I can, you know, it's this has always been a long term plan for me. For a long time, I wanted to work with an artist. I wanted to find an artist to work with, and that's still not something I rule out. I want to do a lot of these books, and I'm not an artist myself. I learned how to make the art that I needed for the book, but it was really just because I wanted to make this book, and doing a collaboration with an artist at this point didn't seem practical for a variety of reasons. So I just sort of took it upon myself to do it, and I actually had a ball learning how to do it and doing it. You know, it was sort of like being a child finger painting. It wasn't the it's not something I would have done for any other reason, but to make the book look nice, I taught myself a new skill, and to my surprise, I think I did pretty well. It was actually easier than writing it, and I always think of myself as a writer, so it was easier to do the new thing than to do the thing that I'm supposedly skilled at.
No, it looks great. And I think one of the future books that you're planning on writing about is actually something that you touch upon briefly, at least at certain points in this book, which is the Venus retrograde cycle and Venus transits as being, I think a large part of your work or different lectures that you've given in the past have shown that Venus transits are actually much more important than modern astrologers often realize, or at least they can be under certain contexts. And you actually go into that a little bit in this book in certain ways, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's sort of a foreshadowing of where the next book is going to go. The next book I'm writing will be about the Venus retrograde cycle, and there will be a number of those books as well. And that is something I touch on in Uranus USA. What I discuss there is the Venus. Venus is a morning star. Now, when Venus goes retrograde, it's an evening star, and then it retrogrades back where it crosses over the sun in what we call an inferior conjunction. Upon its direct station, it's in a phase that we call a morning star. It's preceding the sun in zodiacal order, and it's also moving at a very slow speed at that point. So there are these three periods. I mean, when Uranus is in Gemini, there's this sort of 1 to 2 month period when Uranus is also when Venus rather is also in Gemini alongside Uranus, but in this very slow moving morning star phase, which is pretty a very narrow window. We're looking at a window of about a month to 2 months, once every 84 years. But in the book, what I show is these three very brief small periods present us with the theme involving racial equality, the matter of racial equality. And it's very, unfortunately, slow and gradual realization in the country's history. In the first chapter, in the American Revolution chapter, I talk about the founding of the Republic of Vermont, which was the first territory anywhere in the Americas to abolish slavery. They did this in 1777. They were not one of the original 13 colonies to declare independence, but they did declare independence from Great Britain, and they functioned as an independent republic until they finally did join the United States as the 14th state in the 1790s. So we see the first sort of hint of America's future before Vermont even becomes part of the United States when it abolishes slavery, and that's obviously going to be a huge matter 84 years later when the Civil War happens. Now, in the Civil War, Venus is in a slow-moving morning star phase in July of 1862, which is when Congress passes the Second Militia and Confiscation Acts, which is what allows black soldiers to enlist and fight with the Union Army. And it's also when this is passed, it's the same week that Abraham Lincoln decides that he wants to pass an Emancipation Proclamation. This is the week that he reads his first draft of the Emancipation Proclamation to his cabinet and declares that he intends to pass it. Now, he doesn't wind up passing it until a little later for strategic reasons, but it's the moment when he knows, as President of the United States, that he's going to be doing this and obviously it's going to change the context of the war and make a huge difference in American history, obviously. And then if we jump ahead over to the Second World War, or after the Second World War, in the 1940s, Venus is just stationing direct in Gemini with Uranus in Gemini when President Truman desegregates the armed forces, which is one of the most important measures relating to civil rights. I would argue more important than anything Johnson wound up doing 20 years later, because the desegregation of the armed forces gave American blacks, it made them eligible for the GI Bill. They're suddenly getting college educations, moving into suburban neighborhoods and desegregating these neighborhoods, and everything that we see happening in the 1960s with regard to what was often called the civil rights struggle, that it has its roots in that sort of that post-war era, and the great strength of that movement, I think, derives a lot from Truman's action in desegregating the armed forces. So there's this thread that we see. That, like I said, these are very brief periods of lasting about a month or 2 months. When Venus is also in Gemini alongside Uranus and it's moving at this very slow speed. Mm-hmm. And this is just one in a whole bunch of themes that I pull out of the book.
Okay. So, and you start looking at historical themes that come into play when Uranus is in a certain sign, especially Gemini, but also when other planets start moving into specific phases and a recurrence of specific themes in history.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of things. I look a lot at Uranus just making its stations, going forward and backward, because that's something I often follow in astrology, when a planet sort of literally just sort of stops for a moment, stops moving.
Right.
It's I am sort of transposing, I suppose, an old Hellenistic idea and applying it to a modern planet. The idea of a planet making a station, making a phasis in its speaking. And I wouldn't go so far to say that that's what Uranus is doing, but certainly much in the same way that we look at the visible planets making stations and make a note of them, and we think of them as speaking when they do this. I do see a similar thing with the outer planets insofar as when they make their stations, there seems to be this reverberation that the planet's sort of expressing itself, if you will, in the world.
Sure.
So I provide some examples like that, and also interacting with other planets, as we discussed earlier.
Okay. Do you have? I don't remember. I'm trying to remember if you touched upon Saturn stations, because that's been really big in the past few months. Obviously, the ingress of Saturn into Scorpio, I think we've talked about it once or twice on the show already, has had some very hilariously literal, correlations with what's going on in American politics and just the theme of certain discussions are going on in America right now, involving secrecy and privacy and secrets and spying agencies and things like that. And a lot of it came out, especially recently with the Edward Snowden leaks, which were released around the time of one of the Uranus or Saturn stations in Scorpio.
Yeah. Well, I do touch on Saturn in a number of places in the book. One that jumps to mind is Uranus was making an exact square to Saturn while Saturn was making a retrograde station, right at the moment that the Confederacy was created.
Okay.
When South Carolina seceded, so that's, they didn't call it the Confederacy for like another month or two or something, but the beginning of it, when South Carolina, the first state to break away from the Union, when they vote to break away from the Union on that very day, Uranus in Gemini is squaring a stationary Saturn.
Okay.
So this is something, even though you're following one planet, if it's configured to a stationing planet, that's another, you're roping in Uranus to the fact that Saturn is, as I was just saying, making a statement, if you will. And sure enough, what do you have? You have the beginning of the breaking up of the country.
And that's interesting because maybe at the time, I don't know how they, obviously within a month, things start moving very quickly, but astrologically, because you have that station and that square occurring, you would know, or you might be able to know at that time, that this is going to become much bigger than anyone would assume. That, it ended up embroiling the entire country in a civil war for several years. But that seems to keep coming up. I'm noticing that as a common theme, and I'm sure you've seen it in your work, that sometimes you'll see an important astrological alignment or movement take place, but then it won't be immediately clear, or at least people won't immediately see what coincided with that. And it's only sometimes in retrospect that you can see the important turning points or developments in history that took place at that time, or sometimes were initiated. But at least while you're living through them, it's not always entirely clear what's happening or what the important thing was that occurred at that time.
Yeah, exactly. That's something that's quite common, because naturally astrology is pointing us to the origins of things. Mm-hmm. So I was talking a little while ago about looking at Patrick Henry becoming governor of Virginia and looking at that as a sort of model of the presidency. Well, you know, if you'd been in the room in 1776 when this happened, you might not have realized what you would have been struck, I'm sure, by the significance of Virginia voting, declaring independence and electing their own head of state. But you wouldn't necessarily have understood where all this would go and how this idea that Virginia was advancing on would spread quickly and so quickly and so thoroughly and so powerfully. Because no matter where you live on the planet, the United States of America is a presence in your life, I should say.
Sure.
Except for, you know, maybe a very few people living off the grid, it's, you know, it would culturally and technologically and what have you. We all live with it.
Sure. And I mean, I guess that actually provides I'd almost like to stay on that topic more, but actually that provides a nice transition point, which is that something that you often mention, I think, in your lectures, and you may allude to in this book, is sometimes the biggest influence that the United States sometimes ends up having is through cultural things, through the media and through the arts and through literature or what have you. And I'm not sure to what extent you really go into that very much in this book, or you might touch upon it very, very briefly.
Yeah, not as much, although it's certainly something I'm likely to discuss a lot more in future books. Even the next book sort of merges politics and culture a little more evenly than this one. This one is more or less just about these political matters, these wars and their consequences.
Sure. I guess I just wasn't sure if that related at all to what you had mentioned previously about Uranus and certain signs almost perverting or inverting some of the themes associated with that sign.
Yeah. Certainly. I've got a lot of observations of culture shifts relating to Uranus, and especially in American culture. It was too broad for the scope of this book.
Sure.
I was very careful with this book to be sort of precious about its integrity. The book has 84 pages. In other words, the same number of pages as there are years in a Uranus cycle.
Right.
You know, I could have made the book 86 pages or 89 pages, but no, I really wanted it to be 84. And then if you count the pages that the sort of the extraneous pages, like the introduction page or the glossary in the back, not the glossary, the index in the back, then that's an extra 12 pages. So you've got another sort of astrological number thrown in. So I get very sort of cute with that kind of thing. And consequently, obviously, I couldn't just sort of, I wasn't going to cram a lot of outside material into this book. I wanted to keep it thematically very, you know, tight. I just covered politics in this particular one.
Sure. So, what are some of the, I guess, techniques that you sort of apply in this book, or the things at least that you pay attention to, that have become sort of commonplace for you to look at when you're doing some of these historical studies, in terms of, you know, you're reading a biography and they're like, you know, let's see what Uranus is doing around that time, that people perhaps could also look at in applying it to their own chronology. Like, for example, I think one of the things that you mentioned is looking at whether Uranus was making a station in the solar return chart.
Yeah. That seems to be a really big one. It's a 1 in 84 shot. So anyone who lives to be 84 years old is going to have it happen to them at some point. I had it happen to me when I was 15, in my 15th solar return, which was a year that I wound up beginning what is still the longest relationship I've ever been involved in. It was almost like I got married at 15 in a way. It lasted 3 years, but it was hugely consequential for me in that sense. So that was what I was struck. And there were some other things going on in my life. I don't want to get into a whole biography, but in other words, I've seen just in my own life that one factor in the solar return being striking in itself. I'd
sure.
say that year in my life is significant outside of, you know, any of the others before or after it.
So that's something people can look at, is just find the year in your life in which Uranus will be either at its station or very close to stationing.
Yeah.
Just direct. Or
direct and retrograde. I mean, in the book, I just look at the direct stations, because those are what came up with Tom Paine, Abe Lincoln, and Franklin Roosevelt. But I would look at both of them. I would look at both of them. They're especially interesting relative – what I do with a lot of these biographical studies, when, because I have the sort of the freedom to look at someone's life from beginning to end if their life is well documented, like say Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln's – you know, there's a whole website that'll show you his journals. His journals are online, and you can figure out what he was doing pretty much every month of every year of his life, certainly of his adult life. So someone with that kind of documentation, whose life is that well documented, you can look at various periods in life and get a sense of a sort of Uranian theme. For instance, I mentioned Lincoln was born when Uranus was making a retrograde station, the day Uranus was making a retrograde station. Interestingly, okay. so was John F. Kennedy. But just to look at Lincoln, he's born with the retrograde station. When Uranus is conjunct his sun in the 1830s, this is when he is involved with a woman who, you know, he's not going to wind up marrying. Basically, an early, very significant romance that I think shaped him in a really big way. And then, of course, his solar return stations direct when he's. For the year that he's going to be elected president, and the war is going to break out, and it's the thing that we associate with Lincoln. But even just if you look at him as a person, and look at his whole life, his pre-political life and post-political life, you still get a theme. You can still sort of follow Uranus at these key points in his life from beginning to end, and that's what I find interesting to do. And I think anyone reading the book. If they're going to sort of glean anything from my approach to astrology, is to employ that broad overview, you know, even of your own life, unless you're only unless you're still too young to sort of have that span to contemplate. Well, in that case, I guess you can at least look ahead and make a note of when these things happen.
Yeah.
But anyone who's lived long enough, you start to see these sort of connections between these different periods of time. That's what I always am drawn to with these biographical studies. Again, because I have the luxury of looking at the life from beginning to end.
Sure, and that actually raises an interesting philosophical point, because that's something that really draws me to astrology as well, and that I try to apply in consultations in looking at what the theme or seemingly like the direction of a person's life is, and where certain themes or certain what are some reoccurring themes that seem to keep coming back up in the person's life, and where does it seem to push them towards? And for you, in reading some of these biographies. And noting some of these important correlations when important events would happen in a person's life, where does that end up leaving you in terms of your philosophy of astrology? I mean, do you feel like some of these people have a greater sense of fatedness or purposeness or destiny about their lives? Or how does that work for you? What sort of philosophical implications have you drawn from some of this?
Well, that's the interesting thing. Because I'm really... just writing about the history. I mean, on the very last page of the book, I do address the future to some degree, and albeit in a not overly committed fashion. But because I have the luxury of really just being focused on the past, it's a lot easier for me to throw around words like fate.
Sure.
Because after something's happened, you know, you can say after the fact that say Lincoln was fated to be assassinated, or you know. Hiroshima was fated to happen, or anything like that. You can use that language in hindsight pretty safely. Mm-hmm. It's not like an astrologer saying to to someone in it during a consultation that they're, you know, fated to lose a limb before they die or whatever, you know, something like that. It's right. There's a whole other implication when you start to address the future in terms of fate. I make a point of, I know you and I have had this conversation many times, and it's one of the, I guess, distinctions in our approach to astrology. But I try not to think too much about the fate or free will question, not because it's not important, but it seems pretty clear to me, just in terms of what I've seen over the course of my life, that some things in life are very much planned and predetermined, and some things are not. I don't think there's sort of this perfect, I don't think it's sort of all one thing or all the other, I guess, when it comes to that classic question. But in a historical context, it's perfectly appropriate to just say, well, it's all fate. You know, because after the fact, that's the way it seems. That's the way it was, you know, just in our language.
Sure.
We say things like, well, it was meant to be or it was not meant to be, and that kind of thing. And in that case, you can do that. And I think that's, one of the comfortable things about doing what I do is I can do this very intensely deep probing astrology, because I'm talking about people who are no longer living these lives.
Sure.
I liken it to an autopsy. I'm doing a kind of astrology that is sort of cold and clinical, in a sense. You would not conduct an autopsy on a living person. You would not sort of cut open their body and pull out their kidney and put it on a scale and all that. That would be horrible. But to do it to someone who's passed, this is seen as still a somewhat gruesome activity, but a respectable and necessary one that contributes to knowledge and finding answers. So that's the sort of the safety I have in studying history, is I don't have to worry about screwing up someone's life with the sort of things I'm going to say, because everything's said and done, and this is just sort of commentary after the fact.
Sure, and yet, despite that, because of some of the clear patterns that you've discovered, and because of the similarity of some of the repetitions in terms of the events that tend to coincide with them, that does still seem to lead you inevitably to drawing some conclusions about the future when similar alignments or planetary transits will occur. For example, one that obviously comes up many times in your book is Uranus in Gemini, and I think it's been on a lot of people's minds for a while now that we're coming up for, we're due for another Uranus return in the United States chart, and Uranus is not too far from going back into Gemini in just a few years now.
12 years from now, yeah. It'll be entering Gemini in 2025.
Okay.
I'll say that, I mean, having just talked about how I'm safe in talking about the history and all this, I'll say this: I might not have written this book if we had not just gone through, if the zeitgeist had not just gone through that whole 2012 Mayan calendar thing. because my sense is that, people have already, to the degree that people were going to be freaked out by that kind of thing, they've already gone through it. So it's a little safer for me to sort of pop up with this astrology book that by no means insists, but certainly suggests that the United States would be headed for a sort of a cyclical or thematic return during the cyclical return. In other words, when Uranus enters Gemini again in 2025, the book at least suggests or anticipates that, you know, there would be another one of these big wars, the result of which by the end in 2033 would see the United States becoming a different country in some fashion, redefining itself. Again, as Tom Paine said, having in its power to begin the world over again, which I think is was very prophetic of Mr. Paine.
Sure.
When it comes to the country, there's no way he could have seen ahead 200 years, but lo and behold, he's sort of did.
Sure. And that's, the 2012, that's true. And definitely maybe we're in better shape now, since everyone, perhaps, or at least some people, are feeling a bit burned by the 2012 hype and the fact that it came and went and nothing really happened, which I think a lot of people said. I mean, I said, I think you said, a lot of us were trying to be much more cautionary about that because of what a weak sort of astrological argument it was based on. This is a little different, though.
But I mean, you know, at the same time that, you know, the Mayan calendar scare was turned into a big blockbuster Michael Bay movie. You know?
Right. Well, that was worth it. I mean, I enjoyed that film in terms of disaster films. So if that was the main thing that resulted in, then I appreciate it for that.
Right. Well, I mean, it's again, you know, that the something like that movie makes me feel a little safer about putting out my little astrology comic book that suggests that the United States might get into a war. First of all, I mean, the United States, like we said earlier, is almost always in wars. So it's not like that. It's not like that fact alone should necessarily be any more troubling to people than it already is. But the immensity, the larger consequences that seem to come out of the wars that occur when Uranus is in Gemini, is a little more sort of striking, and perhaps, I mean, if you really think about it, it could be a scary thing or it could be a wonderful thing. The wars that I've discussed in this book are all really horrible events with just unthinkable levels of destruction. But there was reason for optimism at the end of these wars as well. They changed the nation, I think, in ways that I think most people would agree were really, you know, positive in the long run, even though unfortunately they had to come at the expense of so many lives.
Sure. We're talking about the Civil War and World War II.
Yeah. And the Revolution. I mean, all three of them, you know, they were bloody. They were horrible. A lot of innocent people suffered, and there was, you know, so much of it, most of it is so needless. But, you know, once the war is over, that there are always these positive consequences coming out. So I guess I would say
desegregation at the end of or during the course of the Civil War and World War II, seeing the U.S. as the sort of remaining superpower.
Yeah, and also, of course, you know, pulling it out of the Depression, which was, pretty important in terms of where the nation was going to go down the road.
Sure.
So I guess what I would say to anyone is if they were going to read my book and get all paranoid about it, to bear in mind that there's also that, you know, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. I hate to even sort of mention it, you know, maybe we are in for one of these just horrible, horrible experiences that the last three involved. But at the same time, if you're going to be paranoid and think negatively about all that, I would say try to balance that out with the understanding that in the big picture, these tend to improve life, you know.
Sure.
And I'd certainly be very happy if none of this happens, if there's no war. You know, in 2025 or any other time, that's fine with me. I just made the observation. It's by no means wishful thinking.
Sure. Well, that, I mean, I think that's a good high note to end on, or sort of mixed, I guess, some dark possibilities, but also some positive ones.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of a transformation of the country. So, I think on that note, maybe... unless there's anything else to mention, we might wrap it up. I did want to remind people they can order your book on your website, which is nickdagenbest.com, and the print book is now available, right?
That's correct. The print book is available. The ebook has been available for a few months now, and people have been really positive, giving me positive feedback about it. But the print book is just been published recently. People who ordered pre-orders, the book is being shipped to them. So there are very few people who've read the print version of the book, but that'll be coming out soon. And anyone who orders it now will receive it in the mail within about 2 or 3 weeks. The printers are a bit slow, but it's out now. It's done. It belongs to the ages, as they say.
Awesome. And so you did a tour earlier this year, although you're currently also out giving talks right now. I think you're on the in the Northwest.
Yeah, I'm in Seattle right now, and tomorrow night, Tuesday, September 17th, I will be doing a joint presentation with the great Austin Coppock at the Jewel Box Theater in Seattle. So I hope people, it's going to be a really special night. We're calling it Cosmos and Cocktails. Austin is going to be talking about transiting Saturn through Scorpio and various instances in the 20th century when that's happened. And I'll be presenting material from the book and some other material related to the transit of Uranus, basically looking at the periods between when Uranus is in Aries up until when it's in Gemini, because there's always a broader story arc, really. The transit of Uranus through Gemini is just sort of the culmination period, obviously, in this American story.
Okay. Excellent. Well, yeah, like I said, it's a really great book. It's very innovative and also very, very beautiful just as a piece of artwork or literature. So I definitely encourage everyone to go to your website, nickdagenbest.com, and to purchase it. So thanks for coming on the show. I look forward to future works. I hope you're able to continue this series, and we'll have to have you on the show again next time to talk about the Venus retrograde book or what have you.
Oh, you bet, Chris. I can't wait. I can't wait. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you enjoyed the show, then please either subscribe to it or go onto iTunes and give it a 5-star rating. Check out Nick's website. And that's it. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.